Welcome to another episode of the David Mead Podcast. On today's episode, I have Lucy Locker with me. Lucy is the president of the Peter Nathan Foundation in Papua New Guinea, a foundation which provides basic access to health, education, infrastructure, and sustainability. We talk about the importance of volunteering, hard work, and not waiting for someone else to come and help you. Lucy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How are you going?
Very nervous. Thank you.
Melbourne's come out of a lockdown, very long lockdown, so you must be feeling a bit more free.
Oh, it was like getting out of jail.
Yeah.
Even for the kids, because they're driving us insane. Because we had for our sixth lockdown, there were issues for children's mental health.
Yeah.
Especially not seeing each other and not going to school and having that connection. So it was very hard on all of us this time around. So as soon as they said restrictions lifted, we all just ran out and went to shops and did everything, but still wore our masks. We're very cautious about the virus.
Yeah, it would be very tough. So you moved to Melbourne in 1998 from Papua New Guinea.
Yes.
What was the reason behind this move?
I wanted a career change. I had this thought that, you know, in PNG, there was no career aspiration. So no encouragement from the employers to push you to go a bit further. So I thought, you know what, I'll just head towards Australia. I'll pick a state. And I thought, why don't I go to Melbourne, far away from the relatives, so it'll be harder for them to get to me. So I came down here. I worked for a radio station as a traffics administrator. So what we did was we schedule advertisements, and that was my job, 7 days a week. And I decided, you know what, this is not for me. Maybe I'll switch. And I became a tax reconciliation officer for Australia Post. So reconciling all the tax at the end of each month, making sure that they were all doing the right thing. I got bored with that and decided, all right, I'll switch to investments in super. Did that for 13 years and then thought, no, this is not for me. After 13 years, I need to do something else. So the bug with the charity still stuck in me. It was still there. It just had to come out. And then I thought, you know what? I'll go back and help my people. So then I started doing charity work.
Yeah. And what village are you from?
My dad is from Lesser Walai, Gulf Province. And my mom is from Hula, from the Central Province.
Okay. And which one did you live in? Village.
So we lived in Port Moresby.
Yeah.
My dad would always take us to Hula.
Yeah.
Because Hula was much easier and they were more educated than the Gulf people, in the sense where looking after themselves, hard workers. And we were more closer to my mum's side than my dad's side.
Yeah.
That's why we normally go there every weekend. We were always in Hula Village.
Yeah. I remember going to Hula Village as maybe like a 6-7 year old for Sunday school. And it was for maybe 5 days. So memory is very vague. I remember we had to cross, when we got to the end of the road, we had to cross water to get there. Is that right?
Yeah. There was the boat swamps on both sides.
Yeah.
And at that time growing up, the road wasn't that good. And so when it rained, it flooded and you had to be really careful navigating yourself through the swampy area. And that was scary on both sides. But now the roads are so much better. You just fly through without stopping.
Yeah. And when you went out to the village, was there electricity and running water?
No, nothing at all. Nothing. So growing up, I grew up in Hula for 5 years. So my first 5 years was living in Hula Village with my grandparents. And I spoke Hula. I didn't never spoke English, had no idea how to speak English. My mum left me there for some reason. I got no idea. I guess with having 11 children, I was a second last. So, you know what? Just she can go stay with her grandparents. But I only spoke hula. We had toilets over the water. And as kids growing up, we used to swim around, didn't care about what was around us. So we're just swimming around, did not even register in my head. Village kid at that time, so.
Yeah, and you only want to do it when the tide's high. At least,
yes, yes.
At least there's a bit of clear water around you.
Yes.
Well, you see, this is a common experience for a lot of those villages along the coastline. You know, their houses over the water. When the tide's high, kids are jumping in the water and no thought for where the human waste is going.
Yeah, yes.
But I want to talk a little bit about that because your passion is in the Peter Nathan Lockhart Foundation. PNG's main purpose and objective is to provide basic access to health, education, infrastructure, sustainability, and I guess a lot of the issues that Papua New Guinea faces are around those key topics, key areas. So I want to talk about the foundation and why you wanted to do it and what you're hoping to achieve. So the next 50 minutes or so will be based around that. And just so people, you know, living outside of Australia can get an idea of what the current living conditions are like there outside of Port Moresby, because now, it's 2021. You'd think villages within half an hour to an hour would have access to power, running water, but that's not the case at all. And I feel like a lot more can be done to improve the living quality simply because of technology that's available and, you know, the amount of resources available, especially around those villages. So can we talk a little bit about why you were interested in wanting to do it?
Yeah. So growing up in Kalgeri, and my dad used to work for the Housing Commission, and at that time he wanted his relatives to live close by, so all on the same street at Kalgeri. So he gave houses to his relatives, and he wanted to instill in each one of them that we as a community, we look after each other. We take care of each other, and then from there we can go out and help other people as well. So we were brought up that way. So we lived amongst the rascals and all that. We fought with them, but we still had that heart to continue to give back. Even though we had traumatic childhood with the rascals, especially that experience of the unemployment youth, my dad still never gave up on them. So with that in mind and with the upbringing that we had for all of us, the 11 of us, Peter had always encouraged me to continue sending donations. So he'd say to me, oh, I need computers, or I need, have you got any baby clothes, or have you got hospital beds, etc. And I had no idea that he was with Rotary, and I had no idea who Rotary was at that time. So I thought, oh yeah, okay, I'll just send it without even asking him. Oh yeah, I'll send it because we're giving back, we're helping. That was my attitude towards it. Mm-hmm. Because living here now in Australia and growing up, never thought of what the people were going through, like putting yourself in their shoes. Even though I grew up there, I just didn't really put myself in their shoes. So after being encouraged by Peter and being motivated, and I started watching him doing all this charity work, and I thought, oh, I think I better help my brother out and give. So he took me under his wings. He motivated, inspired. We'd send emails, ring up, and he'd show me ways of how to approach people. And I had that training with him, and I knew that he wanted to help my dad's people, especially the school the aid post, and also provide them with, you know, basic sanitation, toilet, trying to get rid of the pit toilets. So he said, there is a better way of looking after yourself. If we all come together, we can work this out. We work with other organizations outside of Papua New Guinea, especially with the not-for-profit organizations. We can do this if we set our mind to it. So it took him a while to try and get volunteers, educating them to say, look, when we volunteer, we're doing it from our heart. We want to give back. And it has to be a pure intention for helping out, not because you want personal gain from it. Mm-hmm. So from that, I learned and I kept on learning and I'm still learning. And I knew that he wanted to fix up the school, but then he had a heart issue and he'd been fighting his heart disease for quite some time now. And it finally caught up with him. So when he passed away, I buried him and I thought of the village people and I thought of what they were going to be thinking because they were going to lose hope. And their thought was, he died and our hope has died with him, so we might as well all be, you know, 6 feet underground with him because there's no one else that's going to help us out. So a few days after burying him, I went down to Lesewalai with my other brother, James Loco, who also passed away. He took me down and we had a look at the classrooms, had a look at, you know, conditions of the classrooms, the aid posts, just practically everything that was wrong with the village, that village had issues with. So as soon as I arrived with my son, the entire village came out and they started crying. I'm going, why are you guys crying? Oh, because our hope was buried 6 feet under 2 days ago. Why are you here? And I said, that's the reason why I've come, to make sure you're all okay, just to see if they were okay, and that to encourage them that we will work together. And so I've come back to Melbourne and a good friend of mine said to me, why don't you start a foundation? We get things going and this way we can get NGOs to help you out. At the same time, we do fundraising and let's stick with one village because there's a lot of issues in Papua New Guinea, a lot of problems, same as what we're trying to do with Lesse. You have the water issue, you have the schools issue, teachers as well. Teachers are not being looked after. Nurses are not being looked after. So if you have a look now, the nurses are on strike because they're not being taken care of. So many issues in PNG. So with this foundation, I established it and created this foundation on behalf of Peter Loco, on behalf of to honour him as his brothers and sisters, because we had our option was to thank him for showing us how Rotary worked and for showing us that we can still continue to help other people and not to give up. So I thought, all right, I'll create this foundation. And I had to ask my husband and my son first before I established the foundation, because if you don't have the support of your own family, your partners or your wife or your children or your whole entire family, if you don't have a support, that's never going to work. Foundation will not work. So with that in mind, my husband said to me, you know that you realize that you will have to give up your career because this is going to be a full-time job for you. And I thought, oh, no, I can do it. I can do balance both. And he was right. It just started getting really busy drumming up interest for this project that we're trying to do. So my passion, my drive is to try and get the people of Papua New Guinea, and especially with where you're trying to do a project. So where you're trying to do a project with a community or a village, you've got to understand them first. You have to be on their level and speak their language and work with them and get them to understand and be aware, okay, this is how a charity works. This is how a project is going to work. But they have to be transparent. See, honesty comes in with it. For Papua New Guinea, transparency is not there. There's too many talk. People talk a lot. There's not enough action. Mm-hmm. And hence why I created this foundation.
So because my interest is in helping the village, Tubusera village in particular, because that's where I'm from, and I see a lot of problems there as well in terms of the school, no medical center. And I've seen kids in Port Moresby General Hospital. I've been there doing just handing out some t-shirts and stuff, taking photos. But then you see that lineup of kids in the hospital just to get a checkup with toothache, earache. And they're lining up all day with their families. And sometimes they don't even get seen. So I thought, if there's just a little medical center in the village that the community can come together and build, they can take care of these basic things, because that's, something that we take for granted here in Australia. That's a huge problem back there. And
yes.
And so I guess my interest is in, bringing together a group of people here in Australia and in PNG, especially in the village, to come together to, take ownership of, helping build these classrooms and medical centers. Now, I know it's not a one-man job, so you need a whole group of volunteers. And now I want to ask you, with this process of trying to get one classroom up and running, what have you planned, or have there been any challenges you're facing along this way?
Oh, my Lord. When you talk about trying to get stuff from Papua New Guinea, it is sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm going to have a heart attack. I wait forever for something. And so I've got to work around and find people that I know I put so much pressure, because like what we said before about the Melanesian way of, oh, yeah, I'll get it for you, and then you wait 2-3 months. I'm still waiting. I don't wait. Everyone I know in Papua New Guinea, I've used them, and I've gone, you've got to find me this. Get me a connection for this. So we're trying to build a school. I had to do my research, and I had to do a needs analysis. I had to find community leaders in Kalgaria, Kilakila, Sabama, Joyce Bay, Pari. I had to go everywhere just so that I could understand, and also from Lesewalai, where the school's going to be, all the classrooms are going to be built. I had to do that and combine all that information, so it gives me a rough idea of this is what the village is facing and this is what everyone else is facing. We've all got the same problem. We just need to start slowly, and we need to concentrate in one community and make sure the community and the village people make sure that they work together with you. They must have that honesty. And for me, transparency is a massive big thing. I need you to show me that you're going to be doing this. Don't say, I'll do it, and you wait for it. And that's what Papua New Guinea have been waiting for, is they get promises a lot of promises. So election time is coming up, and there's a lot of promises that will start coming out. And you get used to, people are used to, oh, they're going to promise us, but we'll never. Mm-hmm. So now people need to change and say, okay, we're going to get a leader that's going to say, yes, I will do this. And yes, he's going to do it. And he'll show you in action rather than talk. And they've got 5 years in office to do all this stuff, and they need to do it. So for me, it was educating the village people of Lesewalai, getting them all on board, and saying, yes, we will do this. Then it came down to, okay, so if we're going to work together, I know that you guys want to be paid something, but unfortunately, I'm not going to pay. There is no cash payment. I wanted to donate food to them to show my appreciation, to say, okay, this is what I'll do at the end once we finish it. A couple of weeks after asking them, they all came back and said, you know what, we won't accept any money from you. We won't accept any food donation. We want to do this for our children's future. And that, to me, is saying, once they build this, they're going to be proud of what they have done. And that's the sense of, oh, I built something with my own hands. I really worked hard. So I want them to also use that motivation, be inspired like that, and continue to the next village, but learn how to work with a not-for-profit organization, be honest, and show that the tools that I'm using, I'm going to also use for the next village, not get the tools and say, oh, that's mine because I worked hard for it. Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of mentality, mindset I want to change with the village people. I know that the older generation, we can't change their mindset, but we can start with their kids, especially the primary school kids, because they're the ones that will grow up and change the whole mindset of PNG.
How do you have the conversation with the older generation? Because they own the land. You know, the chiefs, they talk about, you know, if there's a classroom getting built here, if this person owns that land, you're going to have to go talk to them. What does that conversation look like?
For me, I don't speak the language. I don't speak my dad's language. But I am lucky because Lesser Walai, and I tell you, the entire village speaks English. They speak a much better English than myself, because their missionaries came from England and their way of talking so English. It's just, I feel ashamed when I talk to them. I go, oh my God, your English is better than mine. It's so Australian accent.
Well, I remember in primary school, we'd get a hiding if we spoke Motu in the village school. I think the English gets real fast.
Yes. So it was a lot of listening to what they want. And the big thing is what that community needs, not what we think from the outside. And I regard myself as an outside. We don't think what they need. They're the ones that will tell you what they need. And then we work with that and we work together with them, gain that trust and loyalty from them. That's how we're going to work together and change their community. Because I always stress to them that if you have a healthy and stable community, everyone is happy, the education system works, your teachers have been taken care of, your infrastructure is here, you have good, you know, clean drinking water, you've got nice toilets that don't smell, I tell you, you'll set the model for the rest of the Gulf province, because everybody else would want to be like you. But when you do charity work, it always comes down to finance. Nothing is for free. So the hardest thing is trying to get the finance, trying to attract the organizations, especially in Papua New Guinea. And I know as a Rotarian here in Australia, we have to work very hard to fundraise, and we give up our time to fundraise, but we don't mind because it's from our heart and pure intention is right there. Nothing to do with trying to show ourselves who we are individually. We work as a team, and that's what I want to instill in the people of Lesser Walai, in the Gulf province especially, because our province is the last province in Papua New Guinea to be developed. We have nothing to show for, unfortunately. And right now we are struggling. You've got coronavirus that now hit. Majority of the aid posts have shut down because there's no medication. And our general hospital really needs some help. And we're still stuck in the ages. You see other provinces like Anga going forward. All the other provinces are being developed. You have a look at Hula Village. They're starting to take care of, you know, their basic sanitation, their toilets, all this stuff. And they're doing better. Gulf province, you go there is nothing. And I feel sorry for them. And this is where I want to start, is in the Gulf province with the foundation and with the volunteers.
What do you think Anga province is doing differently to the Gulf province?
Oh. Sir Peter Epatos, if he's listening to this, oh my God, I just want to meet this guy. I have followed him since high school, and he always has this long-term vision. He's more a long-term guy. And with what he has said that he will bring, you can now see the province growing. They've got their teachers' college, nurses' college. He's educating all the Engans. He's also trying to stop the tribal fighting. From memory, from one of his interviews, that he mentioned about that if you are still fighting amongst each other, I won't bring any basic services to you. I'll only bring basic services if you put your arms down. If you work with me, then I'll bring it for you. And that's what he's been slowly doing. And I can't wait to see the new medical research center institute that he's now, you know, building at the moment. And it's, you go on Facebook and you have a look. Oh, it's amazing what that guy has, the vision that he has, everything he says that he will do, he's doing in action, and you can see it. And I'd like for the rest of the 21 provinces to have a look at him and go, why don't we work with him and see what he's doing right that we can do for our own provinces? So if they just approach him and ask him, maybe he'll be able to help. And I'm pretty sure he will, because he seems like one of those guys that is so welcome.
Yeah.
You know? He's just a humble, humble person, and he's been in politics for a very long time.
Yeah.
He's the only one that I admire in PNG.
There's so many people wanting to do good work. I've met a lot of Papua New Guineans here in Brisbane in particular who are sending containers over with, you know, medical equipment, school equipment, and also there's Papua New Guineans living there who are doing good work, but I think a lot more needs to be done. Volunteers are needed and people are educated on, you know, these key areas that you're talking about, especially with education. I think that's an important one, because you drive around and you just see rubbish flying out of a car in front of you. And yeah. I think that's it would be a good place to start with education.
Yes. Yeah, that's why I wanted to start there, because myself and Peter and my other older brother, James, we, because of our dad and our upbringing, education is, he always said to us, you need to start in education. Even though it's going to take a long time, this is where you start. You start from the youngest. And then when the young people grow up, you're going to watch the change, because you're part of this change. You took the time to do it. There's no quick fix. You take the time, you put yourself on the line for them and get them to understand. It's like, you know, I'm a first-time mum, and my son is 11 years old. And going to school here, being educated, I've watched him. And I've watched how their teachers interact. I've watched how they teach their kids. And I've watched everybody, how they teach their children. And I'm thinking, wow. So you repeat to your child who is 2 or 3 years old, you repeat an instruction 20 million times. You keep repeating until they understand. That's how they progress slowly and they get to understand. And kids are, they're like a sponge. Give them that information and you watch that information grow. They will take it on board, but they'll do it their way.
Mm-hmm.
So education is where we want to start. And that way the kids will then encourage their bubus and their families and their mothers and cousins, et cetera, and say, oh, we learned this at school. This is what we do. You shouldn't be doing, you know, their mindset. And that's the thing we want to change, is that mindset, the way of thinking needs to now change to get a, you know, nicer future Papua New Guinea for them.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the Rotary clubs here in Australia. Meeting you, talking to you on online the other night was the first time I've heard of Rotary clubs. I'm sure I've seen it at charity events and stuff like that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Rotary clubs and what they do?
Yes. So Rotary, when my late brother Peter mentioned about Rotary, I went, who are they? They're like a secret group. And they were like a secret group. So they weren't really like, they'd do the barbecues, the sausage sizzle, and you'd go, oh, yeah, they do this, but really didn't get to know Rotarians themselves. And they were just all volunteers. So their main aim throughout the whole entire planet, they want to instill peace and goodwill amongst who they do projects with. And they want to bring people together, organizations, communities, professional business people together to say, okay, if we put our heads together, we help each other out, we can then do this project here, we help, but we work with the community. And like I said before, with charity, everything comes down to finance. So for Rotarians, we are more about advancing goodwill and promoting peace around the world, and to get people to get up, help each other out. We work together. So we don't work at the top, but we are on the same level as you, and we will work with you if you work with us. We will try our best to help you out, but we need you to also look after what you want us to help you with. And that's the thing with Papua New Guinea. You go and you do something for them, 2 or 3 years later, oh, the project that we did, what happened to it? And this is where the Peter Nathan Loco Foundation comes in. What I've done now is with communities that I want to help, I'm getting a couple of volunteers from each community. And I work with people that are honest with me, open communication, the transparency. And this is how Rotary has taught me. They give us lessons. We have a whole heap of information that we want from other people around the world. We get ideas from them. And then you get those ideas and you go, okay, well, then this idea can work in Papua New Guinea. Let's now work with Papua New Guineans and then see how we can fit all these ideas into it. But it's the mindset and the transparency, especially for Papua New Guinea. We need to be honest with what we do, and people need to look after it for long term. Projects that we do are long term, and they need to continue being maintained, especially infrastructure. So I'm lucky as a Rotarian for them helping me out and for me learning from them on how things work. So shipping containers, how to purchase shipping containers, who to contact. It's the contact and how you do things that Rotary has a key to all this. They can give you connections and you work with that community. You work with Rotary, I tell you that you will have all kinds of ideas coming out, and especially yourself with being a professional rugby league player, Papua New Guinean. People look up to you. You team up with a Rotarian, you go out there and meet the people, and they are lovely people. I used to think they were a close group, but as soon as you get in there, it's a whole new world. It's different. It's exciting.
Yeah, plenty of good work being done. And you mentioned the voluntary work and the importance of that. I was talking to Hanan Laban. He's the CEO of the Wynnum Manly Seagulls, a rugby league club here in the Queensland Cup. He's a Samoan background, New Zealand as well. And I asked him advice on how a club in the village can develop and sustain itself long term. And so, you know, rugby league players can develop and hopefully have a pathway into higher levels. And he said, you need to bring a community together that care and are willing to do the work voluntarily. Can you emphasize the importance of that when it comes to this? Because we both know that a lot of the times the mentality is that we want a handout rather than a hand up.
Yes, yeah. It's sad with Papua New Guineans having that thinking of, I've done something for you, I've volunteered for you, and then now I'm waiting for something in return. Mm-hmm. That one I want to change that. And I want my volunteers and the foundation's volunteers, we want to change it. And with people that join with our foundation, I always make sure that their families, especially their children, I encourage the volunteers to educate their kids. I always tell them, if you volunteer with me, you educate your children, then you go out there and you also do the same thing. Because you can't just go and educate from outside of your family when nothing is working for you in your family. So you've got to start from the inside going out.
Yep.
This is where sustainability comes in. So you need to be growing a well-educated community from within for it to actually grow and for it to be long-term. Because then that influence from that community, when other people see it, they'll want to also jump in. You're in that community that's well-educated, that knows what to do. You go out there and you start spreading that. And I tell you, that's like a ripple effect. It's just, I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the Gulf province, especially with Lessie.
Yeah, see, this is my thing about the voluntary work, right? If you're someone who does voluntary work, you're 13, 14, that voluntary work, that's benefiting the community. But the biggest person that's benefiting is yourself. Because you're gaining skills, you're building connections. So rather than sitting there all day in the village, you know, judging what these people are doing, you just get up off your backside and go and do the training. Because then I use this as an example because this is my experience. At the age of 13, 14, I'm on the rugby league field on my own doing my extra training, you know, for hours and hours, never knowing what it would lead to. But time was going to pass anyway. If I was just sitting there doing nothing, I'd get zero skills. If I was doing something, I'd get the skills, even if I didn't, you know, make it to the top grade in the NRL.
Yes.
But regardless of that, at least I've done something all those hours rather than just sitting down. Because there's nothing worse than, you know, sitting there reviewing your year, thinking how it's gone, and you're just regretting that you haven't done anything about it. Because I tell you what, when you're a volunteer in the village, you mentioned that ripple effect, that's going to inspire a lot of other people around you. And I see that with, you know, some communities as well, some kids there. And they're just there picking up rubbish, sweeping. Someone else will pick up the broom and start sweeping as well. So if they're going out building, you know, classrooms and a bit of infrastructure, the ideas will come and the help will come as well.
That's right. It's the mentality, the mental thinking, you know, your mental health. I was just talking to a couple of the youths a couple of weeks ago, and they've had issues at Calgary where hardly no water, water's been put off, electricity been turned off, etc. So that whole issue the rest of Papua New Guinea are facing. So the youths were saying to me, oh, if only our minister, our representative would give us something to do, you know, give us some skills, maybe sponsor us to go into vocational education and learn some new skills, and then help us on how to approach companies to employ us. And I said to them, you know, that's the reason why I want you guys to help me out. And this is the reason, lesson for you is the honesty and transparency. I said, the more I go out getting help from other organizations, I want you to learn how to, when you meet the representatives of these organizations, I want you to present yourself well, because you never know the opportunity there to get someone like you, oh, that guy can do this, or maybe I'll get him to start off and help us out. maybe pay him some salary, pay him money, and then help him continue his education. What do you want to do? You know, what do you want to do when you grow up? What do you want to do for the rest of your life? And these are the youth asking for help. So when I have something, when I have a project for them, they're like, oh, good. Okay, so what are we doing this time? I keep them so busy. I find transportation. I get connections from everywhere to come and either pick them up. Okay, let's do this. Make sure you wear your foundation t-shirt you're promoting. Look smart. Brush your teeth. I always, because, you know, boy stains and that. I said, yeah. Presentation with yourself, very important. And then inside of yourself, if you feel good, it will work. But if you really, your heart is not into helping out, then that's okay. We can think of something else, but maybe have a break from the foundation or maybe have a break from volunteering.
Yeah.
Go find yourself, think of what you want to do within yourself. And then when you're ready, okay, I'm here. We'll see what we can do to help you out.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're there doing that type of work, you're uncomfortable to go have that conversation with those people. But when you have that conversation, you've developed that skill. You know how to talk to people better. You know how to listen better. And this is what a lot of companies look for in their staff members. You might not be qualified. You think you're not qualified for anything, but if you develop these skills, these communication skills, and just the fact that you can get up and initiate something, do something and be persistent with it until you get a result, these are the types of attributes that companies look for. And, you know, little store owners, they want staff like that, because when customers come in, you talk to them and you make them feel good, they're going to come back. People are going to want to hire you. So it's not necessarily about, you know, sure, you want to go to school and get your education, but, you know, if you're not in a position to be able to do that, you can still go out, do volunteer work, and you'll be a huge beneficiary in a couple of years' time.
That's right. It just builds a confidence, because see, the people in Calgary that we grew up with, they always see our family. They come back asking us for advice, or how do we do this, or can you help us out? Or because our family, for us, we are lucky. The whole lot of us are well educated. And this is where the knowledge of understanding gives you confidence, and it gives us confidence because we know what we're talking about. Whereas for youths at Calgary or Sabama, Kilakila, Hoskin, for them, how do I start a conversation? Oh yeah, she's talking about this, and there's no response because they're not confident within themselves.
Yeah.
So with this foundation, this foundation will give them the opportunity to, okay, we'll slowly build you up. We'll slowly bring you out of your shell and give you that confidence to move forward. Don't sit back. Don't wait. Oh, because I'm not educated enough to join you guys. Don't think that way. You come and you help us. You just hand out donations, or you travel to Hula or Gulf province, or you go to Pari or Joyce Bay, Kilakila. Give them donations, shake their hands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those are simple things you can do.
There was one more thing that I wanted to talk about, and that's eliminating excuses. A lot of the time I have some good advice and things that you can apply to your life that'll help you straight away. I'll go back there and talk to, you know, a couple of cousins and my brother in particular. It's all right, you do these things, these can happen. It's easy for you to say you live in Australia and you got it all. I say, yeah, sure, I got it. Like, there's a lot more convenience in Australia and life is a lot easier. You know, you want to see a doctor, it is. But you're living here. What's complaining going to do? What's making excuses going to do? What's relying on the government going to do? There are living examples across Papua New Guinea of people who are thriving. Not just surviving, they're thriving. And they're no different to who you are. They're just someone who decided to apply themselves, put the work in, and I'm sure there's a lot of good people there who have done voluntary work who have been able to develop skills to, you know, help them become more successful in their lives living in PNG, people who have never left the country.
Yeah.
I wanted to get your take on, you know, that type of excuse. If you ever hear that, you know, you live in Australia, you got it good. What's your response to them?
So when I ask a couple of the volunteers, one of them will respond and go, oh, I've got this to do. Oh, I feel a bit sick. Okay, that's okay. You feel sick. Okay, so how long have you been sick for? How long are you going to sit and wait? You're going to wait for your minister to come and help you out? Oh, okay, me blessing then. We're going to sit and do nothing. I said, you want to help me out? You want to volunteer? This is where I want to encourage you, try and empower you to move around, because you're stuck in one place. And when you're stuck in one place and you're surrounded by people the same as you and you're all stuck, there's no motivation, no hope of going anywhere. So I asked them, so the house that you live in, who's working? Who gives you food? Who pays your electricity? What do you do to contribute? Oh, nothing, blank. I said, yeah, what do you do? Well, that's a thing. I want to be educated. Oh, you want to be educated? Okay, so what? You're going to sit there and be educated? Who's going to teach you? How are you going to get around to be educated? So you tell me. They're like, well, then we want someone to come. Exactly. So what I want you to do is to learn to work hard. So now time for you to get up, stop being miserable, don't feel sorry for yourself. You do something for yourself. You work hard. Okay, you come and you help me out. And then we talk about what sort of things you like your interests, so that we can build on that. But I don't want you to be lazy, because everyone around you is lazy, and so you tend to be lazy. So let's try and get out of that. And we change our mind on how we say, oh, me less, I don't want to go here. I want to do something else. All kinds of excuses, all kinds of, because they don't want to do it. They want to sit there and receive it. And that's a thing I don't, you know, I try and encourage my volunteers that with the foundation, this is what we need to do. So when we do a project, let's go do it together. Let's all be motivated to do it together. If you don't feel like it, okay, please don't help out. You just go and think about it. But you're going to think about it and you look at other people before you, the older ones before you. How long have they been thinking about it at your age? And now they're what, 60, 70? They're still thinking about it. They're still sitting there doing the same old thing, sitting down doing nothing. And then they wait for their relatives who are working their hardest to feed the 20 people that are living in the one house.
Yeah.
How is it fair for this one person that's working their guts off to feed you? You look, you turn around. If that person that's earning an income dies, what are you going to do? Who's going to look after you? No one. So I need you guys to now start thinking and changing that mindset, especially with the young boys, because I know that they, you know, get into the drinking,
mm-hmm.
then they start causing fights, they become violent. That type of attitude, the violent and having the conflict of not knowing how to sort of control the conversation when they're angry. So with us, with the foundation, with the volunteers, we try to get them to, if you're angry at somebody, take 5 minutes out. Just let them argue, you walk away and you go and think about it. When you feel a bit better, you come back and say why you're angry. But don't yell and scream. You've got to start thinking that way now. Because violence in Papua New Guinea, once you get angry, you really get angry. And that's where the, you know, mentality of I'm going to come in, you know, that fist comes up and everything just, you know, goes to
everyone,
hell.
Everyone else gets involved.
Yeah. And it's so sad that we need to change that type of thinking now. So I really want the children of Papua New Guinea, especially the young ones, we start respecting our parents. We start respecting our boo-boos, the elders. We learn from them. We hear about their stories. let's just start trying to learn from, okay, I don't want to live like this. I want to change my life. So you change it. You have to. And it's the individual's choice of changing it. They themselves have to do it.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. There's a whole more topics that we could talk about for another couple of hours. There's a couple of good ones there that need addressing. I've just got a few questions, few fun rapid fire type questions just for fun. Just to get a little bit, know you get just a little bit more. First question is, who is your favorite PNG artist, or do you have one?
As in music wise?
Music, or? Yes.
Oh, because I come from Kerama, from the Gulf province, I'll have to pick a band. Holly Meyer always comes into play. I play my music, my Kerama music. You know, nowadays, and you just cry. Yeah. I just feel homesick.
Yeah, I get that same thing. Hey, just listening to Village Songs, just thinking of when I was 5, 6 years old.
Yes.
Sitting there singing with the grandparents. It's always nice to listen to the music from back there. What's your favorite PNG dish?
Oh, there's a few. So I'll just go for, and my family hates this, I love tilapia.
Tilapia, what's that one?
It's a fish. It's, well, my younger sister Maria calls it swampy fish. She goes, it's a disgusting swamp fish. No, it's not. It's the best ever. You cook it over fire, have it with sago. She goes, yeah, all right, you can go live in the Gulf province then. I said, yeah, well, I appreciate their product. I'm eating it. And I'd love to. I miss it.
Is there a saying or quote that you live by?
The one I repeat to my son every single time he humbugs me. I always say to him, all right, do you want to humbug me? You want to go live in Calgary and see how they feel? I said, I always tell him that you need to respect me. I always have respect and always had respect with, you know, my parents, my family. I want you to do the same. So respect is a massive big thing. But, yeah, everything touches me. It just hits me here. So especially when it comes to Papua New Guinea children.
Yeah. What advice would you give to a driven Gulf province kid wanting to excel in their education?
Oh, I really want to give them the opportunity. They want that education. They want to do something better for themselves. And so I've put myself on the line to try and help them achieve what they want to achieve. And there's this one little boy who did the logo for us, and the logo is at the back. I did a competition. And he won the competition, and not knowing his background, his dad passed away. I think he was 8 years old at that time. Father passed away. He gave up on his education. He just went, I'm not going to school anymore. But as soon as he won the competition, we gave him a prize. And I said to him, you need to listen to your mom. You respect her because she'll look after you. And then after that, your education, we will try and help you achieve what you want to, you know, become. And he wants to become a lawyer. So he has decided that he's put his hand up and he's joined us as a volunteer. He wants to be a lawyer for the Gulf province people because he said they need an honest person to fight for them. For him, I always tell him, study hard and be a good boy. That's it.
Oh, that is awesome. I love that story. What purchase have you made in the last 6 months with $100 or less has greatly improved your life?
Oh, every cent I have, I swear, it goes to Papua New Guinea. The $10, $20, I'll get it. Message from any one of my volunteers and say, oh, I've run out of digi credits. Can you send me? And I'm like, I got last $20, honest, last $20. All right, I'll just send it anyway. What do I have? $0. So every cent I have, it goes to DigiCredits. And I always tell them, just make sure those DigiCredits are used for the purpose of using it, not your personal.
Yeah,
don't bring your girlfriend or anything.
They're probably sent out to everyone else who's requesting for the credits.
Yeah, they're 5 Kinara credits or 2 Kinara credits.
If you could put a message on a billboard for people to see on their way to work every day, what would it say?
Giving back to our communities, not tomorrow, but today, like today, now. So that's what we want to tell the Papua New Guineans, that we start helping each other now. We don't help each other tomorrow. Let's not help each other next year. Let's not wait for the government. What we do today, we move today, we do today, the future will be brighter for us.
And that's probably covered my next question. What would the sign say on the way home from work?
Giving back to our communities, not tomorrow, but today, now.
Nice. same message. So where can people find more information about the foundation?
Okay. So at the moment, we are only on Facebook. And it's under the Peter Nathan Loco Foundation PNG Facebook. Our website is currently, I've got somebody currently trying to help me out set up the website, so it makes it easier for like companies to have a look and just go into the website. But the Facebook has reached all parts of Papua New Guinea. So we are on Facebook. So all our updates of donations, any requests, any wish list, any suggestions, you can inbox us at the Peter Nathan Loco Foundation PNG Facebook page.
Awesome. Thanks, Lucy. Is there any other final comments or recommendations or anything you'd like to say to finish off?
Yeah, yes, please. For us, when the foundation does things, what I always stress to our volunteers and to the communities that we want to help out is that, and for other organizations that want to help out, that we want to do things one thing at a time. And for us, it's very important to seek your support and assistance of those who can help us get things rolling. We know that it won't be easy for us as a not-for-profit organization, but we are a group that are determined to achieve our objectives.
Thank you very much, Lucy. I appreciate you being on the podcast. I know I've learned a lot from this. I'll definitely be listening to it again. There are several podcasts that I want to listen to again so I can absorb the information and put it to use. This is certainly one of them. So I really appreciate your time this morning. And I wish you all the best. And I'm sure we'll be in conversation many more times.
Oh, yes, we will. Yes. Don't forget Tubusera Village and their school.
Yep. They're definitely on the agenda. Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind-the-scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.